the day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail, the program dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, secret societies, and ancient Holy Grail mysteries. My show, the Guardians of the Holy Grail, was created by me to clear up many of the popular misconceptions floating around the media regarding the secret societies, Holy Grail mysteries, and the bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Now, through this show, I hope to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Knights Templar, Freemasonry, and other initiatic societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that over the centuries have either been lost or ignored. Now, you can learn all about the International Order of Gnostic Templars, and you can sign our mailing list by visiting our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for the 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course. You can become an associate member. There's lots of videos to watch and a lot of books to buy. Our goal in the International Order of Gnostic Templars is to, as I said, revive the Gnostic and alchemical rites of the original Templars and to complete the goal of creating a one-world Gnostic spiritual society. And we have a lot of goals within our organization, and you can read all about what they are, and maybe you'll align with one or two of them if you go to our website, which again is www.gnostictemplars.org. Now, during today's show, if you have any questions for our guest, feel free to call our toll-free number, which is 866-472-5795. Now, before I get to my special guest for today, I'd just like to quickly mention a couple of tours, or sacred journeys, I like to call them, that I'll be leading in the months to come. In June, I'll be leading a sacred journey to Scotland, and that'll be June 18th through the 26th. And we're going to be visiting all the, what I consider to be many of the important places there. Roslyn Chapel, of course. I am a Knight Templar, and for us, that's one of our meccas. The island of Iona, the Edinburgh Castle, and some of the other Neolithic places, stone circles, and throughout our journey, there's going to be a lot of esoteric information that's going to be disseminated, a lot of meditations. I think it's going to be quite an amazing experience for those that come along on it. If you're interested in that journey, you can go to this website and study and read all about our itinerary and register if you're interested. The website is www.sacredsitesjourneys.com, sacredsitesjourneys.com. And while you're there, you can study about and read up about the August Peru tour that I'm also leading. This is the 8th to the 18th. And I'll go to Machu Picchu and Lake Titicaca, which I believe are the two most important vortex areas down there. And Peru has been calling all of us for, well, at least since 1992, when There was a major reactivation of the whole area, and especially the goddess energies, which are so strong down there, really flourished and really started to beckon all of us to come down. And this is really the place to connect with the goddess and her ancient traditions. One of those traditions came with the masters from Lemuria, and it said that they built these great, huge, megalithic temples down there. These were the Amados, the Viracoches, and it was basically them that established the earliest civilization down there. And so we're going to be talking about them and visiting their temples, and also we're going to be involved with a lot of the shamanic rituals and esoteric rites that I've learned over the years, having been down there about 17 times now. And so this is should be an amazing experience for everyone involved, and a real awakening experience too. And we're also going to be hanging out a bit with the Caro elders, who until the 50s or 60s lived exclusively high up in the mountains, like over 14,000 feet. No one even knew they were there. And so they've kept the ancient Incan tradition very intact, very preserved. And so you can see it in its purity through them. So once again, that sacred journey will be August 8th to the 18th. And again, you can register for it and read its itinerary by going to www.sacredsitesjourneys.com. Now, my special guest today has been on the show before, and his name is Klaus Dohna. He's a museum curator from Vienna, Austria, who some years ago realized that many of the museum artifacts he came across could not be explained in the light of conventional history. Klaus then began traveling around the world collecting these artifacts, and which today he calls UPARTs, which is short for out-of-place artifacts. And he exhibits these around the globe. He's collected UPARTs from many diverse countries, including Ecuador, Colombia, Mexico, France, Japan, and even Sierra Leone. Over the years, Klaus has been able to gather more than 2,500 of these artifacts, 470 of which he currently displays in his exhibition. Recently, Klaus has come out with a book and a DVD, which sound really exciting. The book about him is entitled Klaus Dohna, Digging for Answers and Finding More Questions. And you can get that book on Amazon.com. And the DVD chronicles the work of Klaus, and it's called The Klaus Dohna Chronicles. And this DVD can be purchased at the website, which is www.klausdohnachronicles.com. That's www.klausdohnachronicles.com. And I certainly want to get my copy of it. I'm sure it's going to be absolutely an amazing thing to watch and a real eye-opener. So welcome, Klaus. Welcome back to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Good evening, Mark. Thank you very much for inviting me again to your radio program, which I am also listening, and you have very interesting speakers with you. First of all, let me just make a little correction. I'm not a collector. I'm researching the artifacts, and if I do once an exhibition, then I lend from all over the world, from all the lenders, from some museums and also from private collections, and after the exhibition, the pieces return to their place, because this is very important, that those very traditional and spiritual artifacts will return to their place. I'm not collecting, I'm researching. That's my main purpose, and whenever I have the possibility, of course, I try to present those, or some of them, at least 300-400, that people can really see by themselves, and also that some scientists would get the chance to do tests or checking of the originality.
Well, thanks for that clarification, Klaus. You were on, I think last March in 2010, so it's been quite a while, and I'm sure that a lot has happened in your work since then. Tell me about your new book and your DVD. What information or what graphics or what photos are contained within those?
The book was written by a very wonderful American lady. She impressed me with her knowledge about channeling, which I did not believe before, but she really proved to me that her readings are really something unexplainable. And we met over 1 year ago in Hawaii at the big conference, Earth Transformation Conference, and after my speech, she contacted me, and she told me that she received informations since the last 20 years, and she didn't know for whom those informations were, but now she knows that those informations are for me. So I asked her, her name is Laura Steinhaus, I asked Laura, who gave you those informations, and she said, from several spirits, but mainly from Edgar Cayce. So I, frankly speaking, I didn't really believe that, and she asked me for my email address, and the next few months I received at least one time a week several word pages with informations, and when I received the first one, I was already impressed because she knew some informations which I had already, but she filled them out, and I got some additional informations. And then she came over to Vienna last June, and she stayed here 10 days, and we had a good time together, and she did interviews with me. And with these interviews and some pictures from my life, she did a book about me, and, of course, about several strange artifacts and so on. I think she did a very good job, and I love this book. And the DVD was done with materials from my last 10 years' work, from Frank Jacob and Tonya Maddenford, and there are some movie sequences and also a lot of photos and, of course, also explanations in it, because in a radio interview, it's only pity that you cannot show pictures, and it's more easy to explain things when you can show to the audience also the photos to each story.
Well, Klaus, can you tell me a little bit about the information that the author of your book channeled for you?
Yes. For example, there was one that was, I think, in August last year. There was the information then that in the very near future, I will get in contact with a very important and very big collection. So I was waiting, and definitely in November last year, I got the first contact with a wonderful lady, and she sent me an email asking me if I can look to those photos and what I think about them. So it was a zip file. And first of all, I was careful because I had already hacker attacks. So I checked the zip file and opened it, and I was shocked because I recognized that these artifacts, from my first impression, are original. So I contacted this lady, and we got through telephone contact and emails, I got more and more photos, and we have, first of all, to do the final check on the spot, but those artifacts are so impressive because it's about 3,000 pieces made out of stone and some special material, and it shows things which exactly, for me, was the approval where the Mayans got their impressive astro-archaeonomical and mathematical knowledge. I mean, you could see UFOs, you could see some strange persons, and so on.
So these are artifacts from the Maya land, huh?
No, it's from Central America, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it goes, and so is this a Maya woman, or is she someone living in Central America?
No, she's she was visiting there, and she got contact. So I would not talk too much about it right now before we did all the final checks. But then together we will spread the informations, and believe me, if people see those photos, the first reaction of the scientists, of course, would be frauds, because something like this should not exist. But we did already on four of the pieces material check here in Vienna, and for me, those artifacts are authentic.
And so, conceivably, you could be showing those artifacts in your exhibition soon, is that right?
Soon, I wouldn't say so, because that would take time to do all the research, making all the photographs and everything. But in the near future, yes, maybe next year.
Well, what else did Edgar Cayce have to say about you? I'm very curious about that.
Too many stories, personal stories, or what the future will bring. Also about my next trip, which we are just now planning to Bolivia. I got also some precise informations where we should look for something. And the only thing I can say, Laura is just an impressive lady, and she has a knowledge which I cannot explain. And she proved to me that there is so much going on which I personally also cannot explain, where some people get some informations or contacts and so on. I was a very big skeptic man, let's say, 15, 12 years ago, but through this work, through the contact with many interesting persons, shamans and elders, I learned a lot, and I changed my mind.
Well, last time you were on the show, Klaus, you talked about heading down to Bolivia to check out some, I think, a skeleton that had been found that was like 8 feet tall or so. Did that happen to go down there?
We had to postpone the trip because my Italian friend got ill, and we have to wait until his condition is good again. And, of course, it's always doing such an expedition is always a question of money. So it's difficult if you have to pay everything by yourself. So money is always a problem. There are so many things we could do, but without any assistance, financial assistance, we have to wait until from time to time we have the right finance to do what we are planning.
Right. Well, so I imagine you are really hoping to get some funding through the new book and the DVD.
That's what we really hope, because that would help a lot.
Yeah, so I definitely encourage everybody to get a copy of the book and a copy of the DVD to fund Klaus's work, because it's amazing, and eventually it will rewrite history. I don't know anybody that's doing quite the work that you are, Klaus, so I encourage everybody to get both the book and the DVD. Well, the other thing you mentioned when you were on the show last year was about the Ecuador, the Cemetery of the Giants. And there were some skeletons of humans 20 feet tall.
The landowner is waiting there for me. But as I just said before, I had a big loss a few years ago, and I did some expeditions. But to do an excavation in the mountains of Ecuador, first of all, when I go there, I have to bring an archaeologist with me. Why? because if we would do the excavation by ourselves as non-archaeologists, you could bet on it that the scientists immediately would say that this is a fake, this is a fraud. So for that case, when we are going there, I have to bring an archaeologist. I have a friend here in Austria who would do the job for me, and I also have the allowance from the government in Ecuador. When we have the first bone, we can also get assistance from an Ecuadorian archaeologist. This is very important, but the excavation itself would take at least 1 to 2 months. That's a question of time and, of course, also a question of financing, but we will do it. I had the offer already from television studio that they would pay the excavation, and I would get a little money for my work. And this is not what I think, because if we do the exhibition, the excavation, we try to make our own photos and our own film documentation with a friend of mine who is a very good movie maker. And with this money which comes in, we should also help the people there in that small valley, because they are really very poor. And I think if you get something, you should give something. And if I would have accepted the payment by the TV station, they would have paid it and the excavation would have happened. But the people there, they wouldn't have got anything. And this is not the way it should be.
Well, as I would think that Discovery or the History Channel or some of these other more alternative channels would have approached you by now to make a documentary.
No, not American television, no.
Hmm. Well, so
I have bones from one 7.6 meter giant that's over 20 feet. And we did some checkings on them, and they are human. And there's another connecting point which came up also about 2 months ago. I got a contact with a young researcher from Ecuador, and he was in the so-called, in the famous Cuevas de los Tayos. This is a huge underground tunnel system in Ecuador, and he was in the Cuevas de los Tayos 2 years and before and last year. And so when we got friendship, he sent me some photos from this underground tunnel system. And on one of the photos, you can see a very huge human-made hole, but very huge. And on the wall, there is a wall painting of a man. And this man, Mark, is exactly 7.5 meters in size.
Wow. So do the Ecuadorian people know who these giants were? Do they talk about them in their history?
There are stories about giants. For example, Tiesa de León wrote, I think it was 1576, he wrote in the documents, today we found at the coast of Esmeraldas several human skeletons, but they were 5 times taller than we are. So if you calculate at that time, human, they had the size of about 150 centimeters multiplied 5 times, then you have exactly the size of 7.5 meters.
Wow. Well, you know, Klaus, I at one point I was doing some research to write a book on giants, and I came across information that that giant skeletons have been found in many places in the world, like France, for example. Some skeletons were found to be anywhere from 15 to 20 feet in length. Do any of these skeletons that have been found over the ages, do they exist any place? I mean, what happened to them all?
No, that's the big question. We also researched for the giants in France, but you cannot find anything.
So you don't have any idea what happened to those skeletons? They just disappeared, huh?
Most probably because usually if you say today that in the past giants existed, the science wouldn't believe you. But you find the stories about giants all over the world. There is not one country, not one tribe, which does not have the stories about the about the giants.
Yeah, I agree. I came across many stories like that. Well, I remember you saying something that you were going to have a meeting with some Native Americans to discuss giants. Did that happen? Did that meeting happen?
It was already 2003. I was invited to a meeting of 15 elders of the big tribes through Wayne Deloria. He was the most famous North American indigenous. He was a double professor. He wrote many books, and he invited me 2003 for a 3 days meeting. And the story there was giants and little people, and all of them they were talking about their ancestors' stories about giants and also about little people. But I'm again very good in contact with Professor Muldashev from Russia. He wrote the book The Third Eye because he is the most famous Russian eye doctor, and he did also the only functioning eye transplantation for a lady. She can see today again. She was completely blind, and he was studying in Tibet and many other countries, and he visited several times Tibet. And when he got friend with the monks there, one day they told him about the Samadhi tunnels, and he asked what that is, and they explained that inside the Samadhi tunnels there are human of different size, from normal human size up to 10 meters. That's about 30 feet. And on his fourth trip, he got so close friends to them that they told him, they allowed him to enter in one of these tunnels, but he had to do 1 week meditation and nearly nothing to eat and everything. And then he could go inside, and they explained him, if you go in without anything and without permission, you get headache, and the headache is getting more and more, and then finally you die. And there are stories that Chinese soldiers went in and they didn't come back. So when he went inside, he could go so far that he could see the silhouettes of humans sitting in the lotus seat, and the monks explained that these people, the body has no function at all. And they explained him that they are connected through the silver string with the universe, so they could come back to life whenever they would like.
So they weren't skeletons; they were actual full human bodies.
Human bodies, but from different size, and a lot of them. But the highest, as the monks explained, was about 30 feet. Professor Muldashev, as he is the most famous eye doctor in Russia and also a member of the Academy of Science in Moscow, he wrote the book and he wrote about the samadhis, but you can imagine that the scientists didn't believe him. So when he got a knowledge about my findings from Ecuador of some bones, he visited me in Vienna with his colleague, and they checked. His colleague was an expert on human bones, and they checked the bones, and also their result was that one bone is definitely a human heel bone, but 5 times bigger than normal size. So again, we have the size of about 7.5 meters. And later on, Professor Muldashev did an expedition to northern Syria because he heard about giant footsteps, and he went there with 5 different scientists, and they came to the place where you can see three very big human footsteps in stone. Officially, this is human-made for a ceremonial or spiritual reason. And they did the measurements, they did several checks, and they also brought a piece of this stone with them, and they did research in Russia, and they found out that it was cement. So that was the final improvement, that a really giant was stepping into the weak cement when it was still not hard. So concerning their measurements, this giant was also between 6.5 and 7.5 meters in size.
Wow. Maybe it was connected to the giants that built Baalbek.
That's the other thing. And you have everywhere, also in the Bible, you have always mentioning the giants.
Exactly, right. I mean, actually, in all legends, and the legends of all people, it seems like they talk about them, you know.
All over the world. We found it even in South Africa, in the Kalahari Desert. They have the stories about the giants. But, of course, those people are very little. So for them, a man with 1.8 meters would be also a giant already. But giants, legends, and stories you have all over the world.
Oh, so what is your belief on that? Do you think that these were extraterrestrial giants?
This is the question. As I said last time, Mark, as long as I don't have the final approval, I wouldn't say yes. Could be, could not be. Most probably they were here on Earth. The gravity was different because also the dinosaurs, they were very large. And what I don't believe is the so-called Darwinism, because we found things in South America, for example, in Colombia. There is a place called Villa de Leyva, and close to this village, you have an area with the very, very old stone monuments, like astronomical functions, very big phallus, up to 8 meters, 10 meters, very heavy, and the stone material, the mountain where they brought these stones from is about 60 kilometers far away over some mountains. There again is the question, how did those people make those monuments, and how did they transport them 60 kilometers? But in this area also, Professor Gutierrez found a stone plate with a human hand and a human foot skeleton in petrified in stone. The Stone Age is between, geological dating is between 120 and 140 million years. But then I saw on my last visit, I saw several fruits, petrified fruits and vegetables, but they were cultivated. That means millions of years before, human must have cultivated fruits like cocoa, banana, pineapple, corn. I mean, animals, or around that time, maybe dinosaurs, they would not have been able to cultivate fruits and vegetables. Don't you think so?
So from what you've seen in your research, it appears as though modern human, Homo sapiens, could have been on the planet as much as 120 million years ago.
That's the question, if these were Homo sapiens, because there were the Neanderthals, there were the Cro-Magnons, there are the Bolivian skeletons, which I explained last time. They have elongated skulls, but not deformed, not artificial, and they don't have the three bone plates on top of the skull, which we have as Homo sapiens sapiens. So most probably, there have existed even other races of human.
Mm. Well, it's interesting that it seems as though wherever you find the legends of the giants, you also find legends of extraterrestrials. Right?
That's true. That's true.
Do the Tibetans say where those giants came from that are in the Samadhi caves?
No, they didn't say.
No?
Oh, yeah, there is the story there, and that was the research of Professor Mudashev about Lemuria and Mu, the legendary continent, because until now Atlantis and Lemuria did not exist, but for me and for many researchers, there is an approval that Mu and Atlantis, they did exist long time ago, maybe more than 12,000 years, at least before the flood.
So you feel like you found enough evidence to prove that those continents did exist?
For example, as I explained last time, the World Stone map from Ecuador, which is a big granite stone with 350 kilos, and you have a world map encarved on this stone, but also two continents which do not exist in our days.
Right. Well, of course, my belief was, I wrote about in my book that The Return of the Serpents of Wisdom, that there was in some ways a homogeneous civilization all over the planet, that they were following similar customs, had similar knowledge, similar traditions. Wherever you go, have you found information to or evidence to back up that there was kind of one world civilization, that everybody kind of knew everybody else?
Yeah, we found stones with the same unknown writings in Ecuador, Colombia, Illinois, Glossel in France, Malta, Calabria in Italy, Turkmenistan, and even in Australia. So that means, for me, there must have existed a global civilization, or at least a global contact.
What was the language that writing was in?
This is the problem, because two persons. One passed away. This was a German professor, Professor Schildmann. He could decipher this writing, and he called it pre-Sanskrit, because he said this writing is much older than the oldest writing, Sanskrit, and it has a light connection to the Indus Valley writing and to the Easter Island writing. And there is a second one, professor in Italy. He also can translate this writing, but for the scientists, this writing is a fraud, because it is a mixture of different writings. So for me personally, I think, I have not approval yet, but I'm in contact with several old language experts. The mixture, for me, it would say, maybe from this original writing, one part was taken by this part of the world and one part of the other one, because there are runes in, there are old Greek writings. It's a completely mixture. And so for that, it must be a fraud. But my question always is, how is it possible that at least before 1924, the Glossel pieces were found by a farmer already in 1924? So my question is always, do you really think that before 1924, someone made different stone types with the same writing, and then he brought the stones to South America, to Ecuador, to Colombia, and then to United States, then to Europe, then to Asia, and finally to Australia? I don't think that's possible.
Someone worked awful hard to create a scam, didn't they?
If that's true. And hiding those pieces in underground caves, in underground tunnels, hoping that maybe in the near future someone will find them and then thinking, what could that be?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, a little absurd.
For example, you have the story about the tower, the Tower of Babel. Until the building of the Tower of Babel, they all spoke one language. Here you are. That's why, for me, the legends are very, very interesting. And I think in every legend, there is a lot of reality included.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the symbols. You find symbols, the same symbols, all over the world. The pyramid with the eye, for example. And there I have to say something, Mark, because that's important for the listeners. As, of course, I'm sometimes attacked through the Internet, through some comments, and some people wrote, he is using the pyramid with the eyes, so he is definitely an Illuminati, or he is definitely a Freemason, or at least he is a reptilian. I can tell you and I can prove I'm an independent researcher and I'm not member of any of those groups. And I think the pyramid with the eye is, first, it appeared in writing and in history through the Knight Templars. Mm-hmm. But I think the symbol itself is much, much older, because even on the so-called Nakhal plates, found by James Churchward, there is a pyramid with an eye, and William Neven, 1897, he found in Mexico over 2,000 plates with also nearly the same symbols like Churchward found in India, and there also is a pyramid with the eye. So I think this symbol is very, very traditional, and it has a very strong meaning anyway.
Yeah, I often, when I give seminars, I show them the photo of the one that you sent to me that has the pyramid on it with the 13 levels and the eye at the top. I think it was it Sumerian or Babylonian?
No. This was also found at the same place in Ecuador, in La Mana, in an underground tunnel with 350 artifacts, and most of them, or at least or I would say all of them, have no connection to any known pre-Columbian culture. So that's why those pieces also officially are not yet accepted as authentic.
Because I remember talking to you before, you thought that a lot of them kind of seemed to have kind of a Babylonian or Sumerian influence to them.
This is the big question, Mark, because they found, even in Bolivia, they found out, I think it was 5 or 6 months ago, on some big stone statues, they thought in the past that these were scratches, but a few months ago they found out that this is a kind of writing which is quite similar with, or very similar with the Sumerian writing. So now the question is, for me, Tiwanaku is older than 2,000 years. And an American archaeologist, Neil Steady, he did a great research at Tiwanaku, and he also told me that for him, Tiwanaku is older than 12,000 years. That means pre-flood. So now is the big question. If this is similar to the Sumerian language, writing, the Sumerian writing is aged about 6,000 years. So, did this writing come from South America to Middle East, or the other way around? This is the big question always. What was first?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, of course, Zechariah Sitchin always seems to take it back to Samaria, and that, he doesn't seem to go much further than that. Which is interesting. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that there were a number of extraterrestrial encounters up, I think, in Alaska, and those people that remembered their abductions under hypnosis, recalled that the ETs were actually talking in a kind of a Sumerian dialect, which is pretty interesting.
I don't know that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, there's a lot. I mean, it's just when you open up, some research, it just seems to, like the title of your book, you know, you just get, you answer one question and you just find a lot more questions. You know?
This is what I loved with Laurel when she picked up, she decided the title, Digging for Answers and Finding More Questions. And this is the reality, Mark. The more you find, the more questions are appearing. And, for example, we are talking about the oldest civilization, 6,000, 7,000 years, and then you have a fossil hand and a feet in a stone plate, which should be at least 120 million years. Then you have petrified, cultivated fruits and vegetables, and then you have giants with 7.5 meters. If you take all this, then if the official science would accept that human lived, let's say, 50 million years or 100 million years ago, we would have a big, big problem. Why? We would have a missing link of at least nearly 60 million years. And the question would be, what was in between? And I personally think that several times in the past, there was a big cataclysm, a big catastrophe on Earth, which wiped out nearly all humans. Or they did the same mistakes, what we are doing right now, because if we continue for the next 100, 200 years, we would face a big, big problem, not we. We would not be here, but we have to consider and think about our children, about our grandchildren. And as I got last September my first grandchild through my daughter, I'm really starting considering about their life, because I'm 62. So in 20, 30, hopefully 30 years, I'm not anymore here, but wars, and now Fukushima atomic and all these things, we are destroying the Earth by ourselves. And couldn't that have happened already before several times?
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. I guess I feel as though many of the answers to these timeless questions, they seem to be arriving now. As we move into the new era, it does seem as though possibly that will continue, and perhaps we'll get even more answers that we need to know in order to move into this new era, this fifth world.
I think from old legends, from old artifacts, we might be able to find some answers, but it would take time.
Well, do you have some really unexplained artifacts from the United States, and if you do, where are those from?
I got information from Utah about stone boxes found in a cave with metal plates with another unknown writing. And I received drawings of two mummies which were found inside that cave. One is red-haired, 3 meter, that's about 10 feet, man, and a lady with blonde hair, 2.7 meters, that's about 9 feet.
Wow.
That's one story. I received already photos from the stone boxes and the metal plates. Then I got many informations and even stones for my exhibition and pieces from the so-called Burroughs Cave. This Burroughs Cave officially is a fraud, but as I said before, the stones found in Burroughs Cave, they have exactly the same writing which we found in all the other places. So for me personally, it cannot be a fraud, because Russell Burroughs would not have been able to uncover an unknown writing, and Professor Schildmann could translate some of those stones. So it would, for me, it wouldn't be possible for Russell Burroughs.
So the Burroughs plates.
Also the Michigan plates. I mean, officially, these pieces are fraud. I saw a lot of them and also a lot of photos and all the stories behind. And for me, those pieces are original, authentic. Why they do not accept it? Maybe because those plates would have brought to United States or maybe made there already thousands of years ago, and that wouldn't fit the story about Christopher Columbus.
Well, Klaus, have you heard about any kind of artifacts or strange anomalies in Arizona where I live? There are legends about, you know, ancient civilizations in this part of the world. Have you heard anything about this state?
No, and I would be happy receiving some information, because every information for me is a kind of puzzle, and then putting a lot of puzzles together, maybe we get a final picture.
Well, so where is your current work now, or are you? I guess you're getting ready to go to Bolivia. Is that right?
That's right. But on the other hand, as I did in the past and also in the future, I did cultural exhibitions. I'm right now planning for next year a cultural exhibition from Austria, bringing to China. That's the work, and I have to do this work to earn my money. And money for my so-called second work, the research on out-of-place artifacts.
Are you scheduled to be speaking at any conferences about the ancient history of humanity?
I was invited this March to Johannesburg to the Megalithomanian Conference with together with Graham Hancock, Andrew Collins, Antoine Chigal, and other famous researchers. And we could fly with a helicopter over the stone circles. These are huge stone circles, big circles with inside stone circles. And officially, these stone circles were cow storages. But there are nearly 1 million of those big stone circles, some of them destroyed, some of them in a quite good condition. And Michael Tellinger, a South African researcher, he's coming to United States, I think, today, and he stays in United States for 2.5 months, and he makes some speeches all over United States about those incredible findings, these stone circles, because he found out that they produce a sound and energy. Incredible things. And he also researched on the so-called Adam's calendar. That's a stone calendar, astronomical calendar. And the age, what they found out until now, is around 80,000 years.
Wow. So this was in Africa that these were found, did you say?
South Africa, yeah.
In South Africa. And what's the...
And also
what's
there are the stories about the giants. And then
they also have stories.
Last year I was visiting two times Sardinia, an Italian island, and there are about... between 6,000 and 8,000 big, huge stone towers, some of them destroyed, some of them in a very good quality, up to 20 meters, and they are the so-called giant tombs, very big tombs made with big and very heavy stones. And I met some very old gentlemen in a small village, and they reported to me that shortly before the Second World War, some of these giant tombs were opened, and they saw that military brought out some very big human skeletons, between 3 and 4 meters. So you see, the giants all over the world. And if you see those stone towers, and you see the heavy, heavy stones and the giant tombs on top of the tomb, there are sometimes stones where you just can ask, how did they transport it, and then how did they bring those big stones up to 20 meters?
Well, it sounds like
human would be difficult. And a very interesting thing, then I received from an Italian researcher and publisher, Adriano Forgione, he presented me photos of giant tombs found under the sea. That means that these giant tombs must be definitely older than 2,000 years, as the archaeologists are saying, because the sea must have been much lower than today.
Well, it sounds like you've got a lot more books to write, Klaus, before you get done.
No, I think we start soon, but it's always a question of time. With a friend of mine, we select now all these informations, not only about giants, but about many things, which I always find out that one by one usually always is connected to another one. So It's really, you try to find an answer, and next moment you have a new question.
Exactly. Well, I hope some philanthropists step forward and give you some kind of endowment so you can do this work. It's obviously extremely important work that you're doing.
Thank you, Mark. But it's interesting. It's very much interesting. And I'm always thankful when I get some informations from other countries, from other findings. Like I received informations from Mongolia, from the Gobi Desert, from Macau and other places. I mean, you find those things all over the world, and it's always a big question mark. Mm-hmm. Who did it? When were they done? How did they do these things? Because there are artifacts, like in Colombia, made out of a very hard stone, lutite. Those artifacts we cannot produce today from the same material. It is impossible.
So you're constantly having people getting in touch with you, telling you about discoveries that they have, huh?
Yes.
Wow, it sounds like an exciting life, Klaus. I have to tell you.
I hope I get 150 years old so that I can do all this.
Well, I hope so too.
But I'm definitely
then I'll have you on the,
afraid
I'll
about on 2012.
Show. Yeah, well, then I'll have you on the show many, many times if you lived 150 years old, Klaus. So that'll be good.
Yeah.
I look forward to that. Do you have any shows planned for the United States in the near future, or any kind of conferences you might be coming over for?
Not yet. Not at the moment, but we have an idea. Maybe next year, I just had a meeting yesterday. Maybe we are able to bring the exhibition again to Vienna, which would be for me the most easiest because I'm living here. And if you do such a project, it's better you are on the spot the whole time because then you can talk with the people, you can give them some detailed information and everything. If that exhibition would be in United States, I would be happy, of course, but then I would need an organization who is doing all the work on the spot because I could not stay out from my home for 2, 3, or 4 months or longer.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I run across any, I'll let you know. I would certainly like to see you get over here at some point. But I don't really know of any of those kind of organizations at this point, but if I run across any, I'll certainly give them your name. I just know so many people over here that would just really love to hear you and see your exhibition. So I hope it can happen in the next couple of years.
it would help me, Mark, that people or scientists really could see the pieces by themselves and trying to do a check on them. I have the allowance from the owners when I present the pieces. If we have scientists doing a research on some of the pieces, they allow it. And so it would prove also to your listener that I am not just a storyteller, that I really researched on most of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, once again, I'd like to mention that, you know, you do have your book and a DVD out. The book is Klaus Dohna, Digging for Answers and Finding More Questions. They can be purchased on Amazon.com. And the DVD is the Klaus Dohna Chronicles. And you can purchase that on the website, which is www.klausdohnachronicles.com. So is there anything else you want to add at this point, Klaus?
No, thank you very much, Mark.
Okay. Well, so you're...
Do your listeners have any questions?
Well, I guess not. Well, they may, but they're not calling in with them right now, so...
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're headed down to Bolivia very, very soon then, right?
I hope so, yes.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll have you back on the show after that. I would certainly like to hear what the result of that is.
Yes, of course, because for me it would be interesting. The oversized skeletons, which for me are definitely not Homo sapiens sapiens, I tried to get the allowance to take one or two bones, small bones, with me, and then we could make a DNA analysis here, and I'm wondering what the result would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it really sounds fascinating, and I, for one, am really, really intrigued by the research and the discoveries related to giants, so I definitely want to hear the rest of that story. So, and especially the Ecuador excavation. That sounds really
fascinating.
That's
for me also the most important, because the only chance to prove that they existed is to find a skeleton. And the earth there is so hard that the water did not go through. And this is the only reason why those bones did not disappear. All the other bones, and this is always a simple a discussion when scientists are saying, yeah, if you think so, why don't we find those giant skeletons and so on? Yeah, because any material, if it's not in the right place, will disappear after certain years.
Right. So there's a very good chance that those skeletons are going to be in excellent shape when you find them. So I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that. So in the meantime, Klaus, keep me in the loop and let me know what you're up to and where you're going and this sort of thing. And it all sounds real exciting, and we'll have you on the show again in the months to come.
When I have the next few really interesting results, I give you information from time to time, Mark.
Oh, well, thanks. That sounds incredible. I really would really appreciate that, Klaus. And once again, everyone needs to get Klaus's book and his DVD. His book is Klaus Dohna, Digging for Answers and Finding More Questions on Amazon.com. And the DVD is the Klaus Dohna Chronicles. You can get that at www.klausdohnachronicles.com. And everyone needs to get a copy of both of those. It's one of the most, I'm sure you'll find it one of the most fascinating purchases that you will ever make in your entire life. So thank you so much for being on the show today, Klaus. And I'll be in touch with you, and we'll see where all this where your amazing journey takes you next.
And I thank you also for inviting me, and I also congratulate you for your work. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you very much, Klaus. Take care now. Okay, that's the show for today, and we'll be back on soon again with another very intriguing guest. And in the meantime, always remember that the true Holy Grail, the grail that you've been looking outside of you, is inside. It's inside your heart, and go there and find it. So bye for now.